The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Taxes Show.
It's the show you've all been waiting for. Until now. Until literally right now.
Now!
Literally right now. Literally. Now your host, Eric Metaxas.
Folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. This is hour two on what I think of as Tuesday. Do you think of it as Tuesday? Well, you may remember, it just slipped our minds, I guess, for a few months, but we had a tradition here of doing Tuesdays with Morris. Not with Maury, with Morris. Tuesdays with Morris. Dick Morris is the Morris in question. And we thought, could we possibly get that political prognosticator, Dick Morris, with all that's going on in politics? And son of a gun, we had to pay off some goons, but we got Dick Morris. Dick, welcome back. It's so good to see you.
Hey, Eric. It's great to actually see you. I haven't seen you. I've been doing radio. Yeah.
We've been doing radio. Well, listen, you're one of the key figures that I want to ask. What do you think is happening? Do you think that this president has a decent chance of proving that there was enough fraud so that he will get reelected? What is your sense of where we are right now?
Well, obviously, just to start with the basics, the election was stolen. No question in my mind about it, because I've been working for Trump all along. I haven't been public about it, but I've been speaking with him almost every day. And the polling the Sunday before the election, with large samples in each state, indicated that we clearly carried Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania. We did not poll Arizona that day, but the results are fairly clear. And it was stolen from us on election day or in the days after. In terms of where we go from here, bear in mind there are three phases to this. The first phase was the election day voting, which went heavily for Trump because people who voted in person voted largely for Trump. Then on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, they counted the mail-in and the absentee votes, which were overwhelmingly for Biden. In Pennsylvania, for example, 75% of the mail-in votes were going to be for Biden in our poll, and 80% of the in-person votes were going to be for Trump. So it's highly bifurcated that way. Now, in the recount, you're basically going to be recounting paper ballots, absentee votes mainly, in-person voting, mail-in voting also, but mainly absentee votes. And with those, there's always a huge amount of error. Forget fraud. There's always a lot of error. And most of the error would be in Biden voters because they're the ones that cast most of the paper ballots. So the tendency of that recount has got to be basically in our favor. Now, this process of a recount, a second bite at the apple, a review of it, has not yet begun. And it's the key states to concentrate on are Georgia, Arizona, and Wisconsin, not Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, there was obvious fraud and there was obvious shenanigans, but that's all going to be involved with court decisions and that we hopefully don't get to reach. Hopefully we can win this election simply on the counting out of court.
In Georgia, that's your sense? Before we go too far, I mean, that's interesting to me that you think that simple recounting, not taking into account any fraud, but simple recounting would tilt toward Trump.
I know it'll tilt toward Trump. The question is how far, and that's my hope, and I think it's realistic that that could happen. In Georgia, we're only about 10,000 votes apart. In Arizona, we're only about 15,000 votes apart, having been 25, and in Wisconsin, 20,000 apart. Now, procedures in those three states differ. In Georgia and in Wisconsin, you get a straight, accurate recount. and there'll be Democrats and Republicans sitting at the table, and it will be accurate. There won't be fraud in it. Wisconsin in particular has a very clean recount system designed by a Republican, Governor Scott Walker, former governor. And there will be no cheating there, he assures me, and I believe him. He said that if we won Wisconsin on Election Day, we'll win it in the recount. And I'm confident we did win it on Election
Day. Now, that's a huge statement. You're confident, even though how many votes apart are we at this point?
20,000.
So you think that from a simple recount with no fraud involved, that it would shift that dramatically? How many votes are we recounting so that it could shift that dramatically?
I think about 2.5 million.
And why do you suppose there would have been that many counted wrong? That's what I'm not clear on.
The initial counting was highly partisan. Republicans were not allowed to smell the recount, much less see it.
That not fraud? That's what I'm not clear on.
That is fraud, but we don't have to go to court over it. We can simply recount it and say this ballot was counted.
Okay, but I just want to be super clear. So you're saying that there was fraud, but it doesn't need to be dealt with in the courts. It can be dealt with through a simple recount. Nonetheless, you're saying there was fraud in the counting in Wisconsin.
Yes. You have to distinguish between the counting and the recounting.
Right.
The counting was run by Democratic election boards in all of these states and was highly, highly partisan. And the counting includes issues like, is this guy eligible to vote? Is it the same person that's registered? Does the signature compare? All of those issues ought to be found, should have been checked in the counting, but were not. And now will be checked in the recounting. For example.
But no matter how it goes, if that's the case, that's still illegal. Will those people not be prosecuted for that?
I don't know, and I don't care. I'm after winning this election. In Georgia, for example, we know that there were more than 10,000 people, the exact number is classified in our campaign, but more than 10,000 people who were over the age of 90. And there were 2,000 people who voted who were over the age of 100. So we're going to look at those voters, we're going to call them, and if the phone rings, doesn't ring in the casket, we're going to ask, are you alive and did you vote? And things like that are important in changing the vote. Another example is that in Georgia, probably about 40,000 people voted in person, but in the wrong place. They went to the wrong polling place. Those votes were accepted as provisional and are not included in the current count. That will be recounted in the count as a real vote.
You know, I love the fact that you're so in the weeds on this. I thought you might be, but I didn't expect this level of granularity. I'm loving every syllable, so keep going.
Let me keep going. In Arizona, the situation is a little bit less optimistic because the recount is not automatic. And the way they choose to recount is they do an analysis of all the precincts in each county. And if more than 2%, and they take 2% of those precincts, and they look at those precincts and recount them in depth. If they find a pattern of fraud, they then can extend it to a statewide recount. We're trying to expand that to 5%, and I think we will. And I don't know if we'll trigger it. I hope we do. So Wisconsin is a little bit more iffy than Georgia. Arizona is a little bit more iffy than Georgia. Now, Wisconsin is a foolproof system. I think it's a great system. And we'll either win that or lose it. We can't tell. Now, if we win Arizona, Wisconsin, and Georgia, we do not need to get to Pennsylvania. We have 269 electoral votes, one short of a majority on just those three states. And it then would be a dead even tie. 269 to 269 would go to the House of Representatives, and we will win there. Even though the House is in Democratic control, under the Constitution, when it goes to the House, every state gets one vote, regardless of its size, and we have a majority of those state delegations, so we would clearly win in the House. You don't know your history. 1800, Aaron Burr versus Thomas Jefferson. Jefferson won 7-6 among the states.
I'm so fascinated by that because that strikes me as arcana. I'm not responsible for Arcana. That's your department. But well, honestly, that's an amazing thing to know.
It derived from the decision to have a Senate that was not representative and a House that was.
Sure.
And so in choosing the president, they merged the two of them.
Right.
The House cast the vote, but on basically Senate rules.
Oh, we've got to go to a break. Forgive me. We'll be right back, folks. I have the joy of speaking with Dick Morris, and you've got the joy of listening to Dick Morris. Don't go away.
It's a burning thing. And it makes a fiery ring.
Welcome back. I continue my conversation with Dick Morris. You know him as a political pollster, prognosticator, pundit, genius. I wouldn't say that if you were on the program. I don't want to embarrass him. But oh, there he is. Sorry, Dick. I didn't say that. Let me ask you, Dick. I see this in a way. It's like a baseball game, right? Like, let's say there's a tie, and then you go into the 10th inning. And in the 10th inning, you have zero outs, and someone hits a home run. And everybody goes home. But it seems to me that if you have three outs, you should play out the whole inning. What I'm trying to say is it's one thing for this president to win, but it's important for him to have a mandate, to have as many electoral votes as properly are coming to him by the voters in America. So for him to win 269, it doesn't give him the mandate necessary that he ought to have. In other words, if the other side cheated, it seems to me that it's part of the process of understanding what happened to know how much they cheated, how many votes they stole, how many states they stole. Because if he gets 320 electoral votes, that's rather different than getting 269.
First of all, Eric, your knowledge of baseball is limited. It's only in the bottom half of the extra inning that people go home with a home run.
I already knew that. I was assuming that, but thank you.
Well, I don't really agree with you. I just want to be sure we win.
Right.
Now, and in terms of mandate, Donald Trump doesn't need a mandate. He grabs it whenever he is. But I want to go on to Pennsylvania before we have to go.
Okay? Sure.
That's important. Now, if Georgia, Wisconsin, and Arizona are not enough to produce a tie in the Electoral College or victory, we then need to reach Pennsylvania. Now, in Pennsylvania, there are various levels of challenge that we can have. The first level of challenge is the easiest, which is we lost it allegedly by 45,000 votes. And there are 100,000 people in Pennsylvania who voted in person on election day in the wrong place. And those votes can be automatically counted in a recount. And no question, because we won 80% of the votes of in-person election day voting, according to our surveys, we will win the election if those votes are counted. And it's very hard to see how they would not be counted in a recount. Then the other level would be that there are an unknown number of votes. I've heard the figure 100,000, but it's not precise, of people who voted after election day. There's no proof, there's no postmarks to indicate they voted before it. And with the Secretary of State of Pennsylvania, a Democrat, has ruled that those votes have to be counted if they were in fact received within 3 days of the election. The state legislature has said they can only be counted if they were received by or on the day of election.
By 8 p.m.
The Supreme Court punted 4-4 on whether the Secretary of State could overrule the legislature on this. 4 said no, Constitution leaves it with the legislature. 4 said we're not going to take this case because it's not ripe yet. Now, the court with Barrett on it will rule on that if we bring it up again. And I don't see how they can possibly rule that the legislature does not rule over the Secretary of State. The Constitution says nothing about the Secretary of State.
What about Alito's ruling? How does that figure in?
That's what I'm saying. Alito ruled that, well, first, Alito was in the 4-4 decision not to take the case. He wanted to take it, but he was outvoted. Then after that was decided, the Republican Party brought a motion to Alito. And they said, in the 4-4 decision, you guys said that at the very least, the ballots had to have been in 3 days after the election. And at the very least, they had to have been postmarked before the election. But right now in the counting going on around the corner in Pennsylvania, those rules are not being observed and Republicans are not being permitted to verify that the votes that are counted are in conformity with that. Alito said, oh my God, I'm now issuing a second order saying, obey my first order, damn it. And he did that on Friday before last Friday. So there are several issues. Number one, should votes that were counted after Friday be counted? Secondly, was the court correct in the, does the court want to revisit the 4-4 decision about votes cast after Tuesday? And those, because they did not rule that the legislature prevails over the Secretary of State. They didn't reach that question. And we can bring it up again. And they will now have a 9-man court to make that decision with Barrett on it and a good, healthy conservative majority. So stuff looks our way in both of those situations. Then we have a third layer of to reach, which is the actual recount itself. And in the actual recount itself, paper ballots will be scrutinized heavily. The problem is that in Pennsylvania, the recount is not automatic unless you lost by half of 1% or less. And we lost by 0.6%. I believe the Democrats stole it until they could get over the half of 1%. I think they consciously had that goal in mind. But you can order a recount. The court can always do it, and the legislature can do it. And the legislature is Republican. So I think we have shots at all three of those levels in Pennsylvania. And we do not have to reach Pennsylvania unless we lose, again, Wisconsin, Arizona, and Georgia. So that's where the situation stands right now. Overall, I'd give you about 1 out of 4 that Trump is the next president. I don't want to be more optimistic than that. But there certainly is a chance, and not a bad chance.
But you only are putting it at 25% from what you just said.
Mm-hmm. That's because there's so many hurdles. Do we get a recount in Wisconsin? Do we get the 100,000 votes in Pennsylvania? Do we get a recount in Pennsylvania? There are so many things that could go wrong, but all of them could also go right.
Well, as I said, that doesn't sound like good odds to me. 1 in 4. You're convinced that the Democrats stole the election, but you're not convinced that it can be adjudicated.
What happened was fairly obvious, I think. Pelosi knew they were going to lose. So she pushed for paper ballots using the virus as an excuse. And when the virus faded, she still pushed for paper ballots. And that was because paper ballots are easier to steal. Then the networks all said Biden's going to win by a lot, which was obviously wrong. They obviously knew it was wrong because they were all coordinated in the same wrong finding. And then on election night, they all called it early, prematurely, because obviously you couldn't call Arizona early. It'll go one way or another by less than 10,000 votes. And North Carolina and Alaska still have not been called for Trump, even though we've led there by 75,000 votes in North Carolina and Alaska by 2-1 all week. So the networks tried to create the impression that this election is over, and they call Biden president-elect with just such a motive. The whole goal of this is to tell the country, come on, let's unite together, let's not quibble after the election. They're raising the phony issue of will Trump concede after all the votes are counted and the challenges have been exhausted, or will he hang on to the curtains and we'll have to pry him loose? Those are all distractions by the Democrats to create the impression that this is a done deal, and it is not.
Well, it's not a done deal, but again, you're making it sound like much more of an uphill climb than I thought. In other words, if you really do believe that they stole the election and you push everywhere you can push, I guess my question is, are there other states where there was fraud. What did you say about Michigan? I don't remember.
Well, there probably was fraud in Michigan, but there was so much of it that we're down by 150,000 votes, and that is a hill too steep to climb. But Eric, you're wrong to be anything less than very happy about that briefing. To be able at this point in time, 1 week after the election, to say that there is at least a 1 in 4 chance of pulling this out is a very positive thing.
I guess I guess it depends on your point of view. In Michigan, I mean, I know someone personally who called me up who was in the room. I forget the name of the building. It was 3 letters or whatever it is, some kind of a center. And he said clearly there were shenanigans when he asked the question. They asked him, "Are you a racist?" or whatever. And this is he works. He's very, very close with the senatorial candidate, James. And but he said a number of things like that. That's fraud. So in other words, putting a recount aside, whether a recount is triggered or isn't triggered, wouldn't the Trump administration want to push and say there was fraud? Our people were not allowed to observe.
Well, they may get to that, but that's a more distant reach, and we're focused on more immediate things that we think we can win.
Forgive me. Hold that thought. We'll be right back for a final segment. Hey, folks, welcome back. My guest this hour is Dick Morris. Dick, I know you've got to leave in the next few minutes, but continue your thoughts until you have to go. Go ahead.
The disappointment you're echoing is something many Trump voters feel, and they must not feel. They must not give way to depression or pessimism. Those are death in this situation. Remember what Dylan Thomas wrote: "Go not gentle into that sweet night, but rage, rage, rage at the dying of the light." That's the attitude you have to have.
Well, I agree with that. I'm going to rage against the dying of the light always. And I think part of the reason this president is so loved by so many is that he's such a fighter. I think any other president might have simply let this go. But I think his sense of injustice, his sense of anger at what has happened, will probably make the difference.
Yes.
But I'm glad. I didn't know that you were involved in this. I'm very glad to think that you are.
I spoke to the president and I quoted that poem, I said to him, he said, "So what do you think I should do now?" And I said, "Start acting like Donald effing Trump."
Yes. And is there any other kind of Trump that you know of? Do not go gentle into that good night.
Good night.
Rage, yeah, rage against the dying of the light. That's the charge of the Light Brigade. Is that Kipling?
No.
Who is that?
It's Dylan Thomas.
It was an Irishman. Well, Dick, we're grateful for your time. You did say you have to go, correct?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're grateful for your time, and we will get you back here because it seems like this is going to go on for a little while, so we'll be in touch with
Tennyson,
you as soon as possible.
Tennyson.
Thank you very much. I knew it had to be 19th century, not 20th century. God bless you, my friend. Thank you so much,
Dick
Morris. Dick Morris had to go, but I got to say, Albin and Chris, since he did have to go, I'm not sure what I think about what he was saying. I guess I do find it discouraging in some ways that he feels that the election clearly was stolen, but he puts it at a 1 in 4 chance for Trump to regain, the lead. From what I know, which is rather different from what Dick seems to know, the odds are significantly better than that. Also, maybe I'm taking into account something really, really super rational, and supernatural, which is the power of prayer, because many people are praying. I mean, because the injustice, it just outrages me that, you know, you say, well, it was stolen, but it may be too late to do anything about it. I think to myself, in the United States of America, everybody should be disgusted if an election was stolen. He's saying clearly it was stolen. So, you know, he just confirms to me what I feared, that it really was fraud. So I don't know. What did you guys get anything out of that I missed?
Yeah. I got that sense too, that he's like saying, well, here in a sense is a path to victory. Then after he says all of that, like if everything goes our way, and then it sounds like he's saying like, if everything goes our way, which is victory, yeah, we get a 1 in 4 chance to claim that victory, like taking that football back. They got the football, and it's really hard to get that football back. So I don't know. It was a little discouraging, I must say.
Well, Dick Morris has definitely been in all sorts of situations, and, you know, he's an old war dog. So I remember when he came on, he talked about how, ironically, they were able to help Boris Yeltsin win a hopeless election in Russia.
Right, right.
So, I mean, I think he's just a realist at this point, but the fact that he gives it a 25% chance actually is a lot higher than I think his opponents are giving him at this point. So that's not a bad thing.
I guess I got two things to say. First of all, if anybody's watching this on video, whenever they see you, Chris Himes, there's an endless Mike Lindell loop playing behind you. And that's a reminder to everyone, go to mypillow.com, use the code Eric and save huge. Mm. Actually, you do save huge. And then you can go to mystore.com and get the Caveman books for like almost nothing. I don't know what, you know, there's nobody's making money. I guess I know that Dick Morris is a Christian, and if I had an opportunity to quote something inspiring to Trump, if I had him on the line, I don't know that I would quote Tennyson. I think I would quote scripture. There are many scriptures I can think of that would be more inspiring than Tennyson. Tennyson is one of those, you know, like it's a nice idea, but I, you know, when you're a realist, as many people are, and I am, I want to know that God is with me, as opposed to, you know, if I just fight harder. But, you know, I can understand why he would say that.
Yeah, yeah, and saying to go gently into that great good night or whatever it was. That sounds a little negative.
Do not go gently.
Do not. I know, but still.
Not go gently into that good night. Rage against the dying of the light.
Yeah, but kicking and screaming doesn't always get you what you want.
Well, I think.
Back fisting and, you know, kick them while they're down kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's, well, look, again, I think that the idea of Biden being president legitimately is upsetting to me, but his being president illegitimately, to me, that idea should be a non-starter in the United States of America. If somebody is rightly elected, and it's clear that he was elected legitimately, then I think we all have to accept it, even though obviously the folks on the left didn't accept it when Trump was elected. We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we've got a special Ask Metaxas segment. It was recorded over a week ago, so there's nothing topical. And then we've got a little surprise for you in the final five. Do not miss that. I think you'll like it.
We're going to find out, pretty mama, what turns on your lights.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Eric Metaxas, and I have the authority to proclaim this segment of the Eric Metaxas Show as an Ask Metaxas segment, where you, the viewing, listening audience, get to ask Metaxas any questions you like. And Alvin, you're going to be playing the role of Axer, so please ax away.
Okay, here we go. This is from Jeremy. He's a listener, a fan, and Jeremy says, I've lately started listening to you and have been very encouraged by your honesty, truth, and especially with regards to your Christian faith. I have found it difficult to reconcile MacArthur with Bethel all my life. Now, I think you're going to explain those two, right, Eric? But watched you defend both. How do you put these two together?
Okay. Well, what Jeremy seems to be referring to is John MacArthur, who is a brilliant preacher and expositor of scripture, who is in the Los Angeles area. He's very, very famous, John MacArthur, very, very big deal. Bethel, Jeremy's referring to Bethel Church up in Redding, California, way, way, way up near the Oregon border. And he says he found it he's found it difficult to reconcile John MacArthur with Bethel all his life. Okay, what he means by that is Redding Church in Bethel Church in Redding, headed up by Bill Johnson, whom we've had on this program and whom I've had the privilege to get to know a little bit, is famous for, you know, what do we call it? The charismatic stuff, healing. And deliverance and prophetic utterances and all the stuff that the Bible calls the gifts of the Holy Spirit. When I first became a Christian in 1988, I was exposed to this immediately, and I thought this is just normative Christianity. And of course, there are wacky people who will abuse it or who will, out and out misuse it deliberately. But generally speaking, it's a real thing. And so I've experienced speaking in tongues and miracles and all that stuff. I've experienced all that. And I've been around plenty of people who've experienced that. And there are some people who are tremendously gifted in that. And of course, there are counterfeits, right? So I'm going to be speaking actually at Bethel Church at the end of November, so I must think pretty well of it if I'm going to be speaking there, which I will. I do believe in those things, but I don't think it's a deal breaker if somebody doesn't. Bonhoeffer and Wilberforce and many of my heroes in the faith knew nothing of this stuff and didn't traffic in it. And I do think that there are potential dangers. I think every part of the Christian faith attracts different types, different personalities. And so if you're really cerebral, you may be attracted to the Reformed stuff and you may sneer at this stuff because it seems emotional. If you're really emotional, you may be attracted to this kind of stuff and you sneer at the MacArthurites. I think that when you're living, particularly when you're living in a secular culture as we are today, a culture increasingly hostile to Christian faith, I think you have to be as open as you can and as ecumenical as you can. The reason this Jeremy asked this question is because John MacArthur, whom I revere, has spoken very strongly against Bethel Church and what he perceives is happening there and in a number of those kinds of movements around the country. I think on that he's wrong. He's also taken a particularly sharp stand against the Catholic Church. I also would disagree with him on that, but that doesn't prevent me from loving him and loving what he does, which is considerable to say the least. He's just a tremendous Bible teacher and very heroic recently in California, standing up to the governor. And so I'm all in for MacArthur, but I'm also all in for my friends at Bethel Church. And people say, how do you reconcile that? I don't know how to reconcile it. I don't think that we need to be in the business of saying, I only am with this one or that one. I'm for Jesus. I'm for what the Bible says. And I think we all have to do our best to see where we're going to draw those lines. So I just, you know, anybody who feels like they must make a choice between the two, I don't see why. I really don't. I don't seem particularly reason to do such a thing. So that's my short answer. I don't know if we have time left. Right. What's the next question?
Okay. Yeah. Dear Eric, how do you like my mustache? Oh, I'm sorry. That was my question. This is from Jolie. Don't answer that, by the way. Jolie says, do you have any books or resource recommendations for parents who want to protect their children from the current white privilege, anti-racism propaganda? Our school just issued its stance on systemic racism and its intent to indoctrinate my child on her white privilege and train her to be anti-racist. I want to provide her with a balanced education and empower her to identify the underlying poisons of Marx and Lenin and Howard Zinn that permeates this ideology. I cannot seem to find any resources online. This is happening in an environment where it has been made clear that our Christian religion is not appreciated, but the Hindu and the Muslim religions are.
Okay, here's my question. Why should parents have to teach their kids against what they're learning in school? That seems to be, if you've got the time to unteach the garbage your kid is getting in school, maybe you have the time to teach your kid and to take them out of that school. I honestly think that parents are have been ensorcelled by the idea of education, and they kind of act as though they know nothing. Well, you know enough to know that this stuff being pushed on your kids is garbage. I think that parents need to take a strong stand. Again, now, by the way, this is an 8-minute segment, right?
Yes.
Parents need to take a strong stand against these kinds of things. And I think the strongest stand you can take is pulling your kid out of that school. I don't know why my kid, whether funded by taxpayers like myself or funded by privately, if I'm sending my kid to a private school, why my kid needs to be taught something that I know is not true. That strikes me as utterly wrong. I don't want them in that classroom. I don't want them subject to that garbage. Parents need to be much stronger. You need to either speak up at the school, threaten the school that you're going to take your kid out, or you're going to get all the other parents up in arms over this. This is not okay. And Americans are too nice. We say, oh, okay, I'm going to let my kid go through that, and then I'm going to try to unteach it in my spare time. What spare time? People are busy. It's the school's job to teach kids what is true. I simply think I would haul my kid out of that school, or I would do everything I could. I wouldn't play patty cake with evil. These are pernicious lies. And I would say, speaking of what books to read, the Bible, that's, I guess I'd start there. We're out of time, so I will also end there. Thank you. I can almost remember the bloody faces. Folks, welcome back. As promised, a surprise. At the end of hour two, which is where we are right now, I said, let's save it for then. Here's a surprise. I could say anything right now.
Surprise!
Really, really crazy. Like, I don't want to freak you out, but I had an operation and this is not my original head. But on radio, people wouldn't be able to tell. No, here's the big surprise. People have been writing us, that's to say you folks have been writing us saying, how can we buy the Eric Metaxas Show t-shirt? They're not available anymore. How can we buy the Eric Metaxas Show cap, because people love the caps? How can we buy the coffee mugs? Those are the best, blah, 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 blah. And I said, wow, if people really want this stuff, what can we do? Chris, Albin, what can we do to get this stuff available again? And they never answered my emails.
Okay.
But then eventually we pulled it off. And so this announcement is that if you go to our website, MetaxasTalk.com, right below Georgie. Georgie's the little doggy standing at my feet. Right below Georgie, there's the banner. It's the Eric Metaxas store. Is that what it says? I can never remember what it says.
Yeah, it's called Shop Metaxas. And if you go to shopmetaxas.com, you'll also get there.
Well, it says shop now, doesn't it? Or what does it say? Anyway, the point is, when you go there, it says the Eric Metaxas Show, shop now. You can get Donald the Caveman books. You can get the main reason we're telling you this is that the mugs, the t-shirts, and the hats are available. But here's the really big surprise. They are priced insanely low.
Yeah.
Insanely low. This is not too much more than cost. We ordered enough so that we could get the costs way, way, way down. So the hat is how much, Albin?
The hat is $6.99, so $7. The t-shirt's only $9.99, $10, or three for $25. And the mug is very cheap too, and it's a limited supply.
To me, to do it that cheap, I'm not even joking. The mug, it says $4.99 for the mug. Shipping is more than $4.99 on the mug. That's like insane.
Yeah. And there's a limited supply on the mug, so you better go now and get it.
I'm not seeing the t-shirts. You got to go to categories apparel.
Yeah, you got to go to apparel.
All right, folks, I am not kidding. This is the same quality that we've ever had. This is not much more than cost, okay? This is not much more than cost. I'm just telling you, Christmas gifts, whatever you want, these are very cheap. The hats, $6.99. hats like this easily go for $16.99 or $21.99. I mean, this is a nice hat.
Yep.
The t-shirts, very thirsty cotton, almost overly thirsty. $9.99, and I think aren't they going to put like a 3 for $25 or something?
Yeah, three for $25. Wait till tomorrow on that one. And if they're thirsty with the t-shirts, don't forget the thirsty mug.
But seriously though, these are like insane prices. So I want to be really clear, folks. It's while supplies last. I don't think we can afford to sell them like this for too long. But I said, let's start it with a bang. So no joke, the hat is $6.99. The t-shirt is $9.99. Tomorrow, it'll be 3 for $25. And then the mug, that's the most insane of all. I run out of mugs. I'm going to order them from the store because that's so cheap. It's $4.99. These are gorgeous mugs.
Yeah.
Alvin, we've got to increase the price of the mugs. I'm not kidding. That's insane.
Okay.
No. I mean, I'm not kidding. Like that's really, you can't.
Well,
it's a beautiful mug. It's a huge, beautiful mug.
And end of the week, if there are any left, end of the week, we're gonna have to raise the price. There's only a few left.
Okay. Well, whatever. Anyway, well, that's the surprise, folks. Please share these videos with your friends. Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Please go to ericmetaxas.com and subscribe for my personal newsletter. It's really important, I think, at this point. The news is harder to get. We know that Fox News has, you know, I don't know, what's the technical term for sell your soul?
Gone over to the dark side. They've gone over to the dark side.
I think sell your soul is not the original Aramaic. Anyway, folks, tune in tomorrow, and thanks for listening.